Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Jeff Lucas, and I am somewhat weary, even exhausted, because I just got back from speaking at a church weekend in Mid Wales. A Birmingham-based church, Riverside, invited me to share with them over a three-day event where around 300 of their people gathered together, young and old and everything in between. It was a wonderful occasion, an opportunity to see the church at its best as people laughed and cried, young and old gathered together. And there was such an openness, a responsiveness, as those who attended had come ready to hear teaching, engage in worship, and just be together. An added bonus was that a number of people became Christians during those 3 days. And the experience caused me to think about the way that we view church. How do we think about the local church that we are part of? Sometimes we talk about our church, and that's a good thing in terms of clearly identifying with it. But at times we can start to think that the church exists for us. It's all about us being served rather than us serving. Also, we can come to the idea that the church should be a place where I find others who are like me and who always agree with me, which of course is the very reverse of the purpose, which of course is completely in opposition to the real purpose of the church. There, people of diverse opinions, politically, socially, economic status, we all gather together under the shadow of the cross, which alone unites us. Still, other people believe that the church can be a place where we can shout at each other and even at our world as we disagree. So this week and next week, let's think about the way we view church. It was our first time in America decades ago. We were savoring the experience of eating breakfast out at what was unappetizingly tagged as a greasy spoon, a diner. Our server was a wildly enthusiastic soul, apparently thrilled to be helping us with the first meal of the day. But the ordering process soon became rather perplexing. "And what can I get you fine folks?" he twilled, all teeth and smiles. "I'd like eggs and bacon, please," I replied when it was my turn, eager to keep things simple, which they were not. "Awesome, sir," he chirruped, as if I discovered a solution to global warming. "And, sir, how would you like those eggs?" Bewilderment immediately set in. That often happens to me. "I'll take them on a plate," I ventured. "Aha, awesome, sir. Very witty. Now, you can have your eggs scrambled, boiled, or fried, over easy, sunny side up, or over hard." Baffled by this unfamiliar glossary of terms concerning the fruit of the chicken, I went for what sounded most familiar. "Scrambled, please." "Awesome," the server responded. "What about toast? We have sourdough, whole grain, wheat, white, rye, or you can have an English muffin." Now, I was really confused, not least because I was unaware that the English have their own muffins, so I went for wheat toast. But the culinary inquisition continued, and I had to decide whether I wanted American or Canadian bacon, and would I like it crispy, and would I like to add further side dishes. When at last our ecstatic server skipped joyfully towards the kitchen, I felt momentarily exhausted. You see, as a consumer, I was being given the opportunity to have things exactly the way I want them. No one-size-all approach is sufficient. One popular fast food emporium chain used to have it your way as their marketing slogan. When it comes to choices, we the consumers really are kings. Perhaps that's just fine. But when an attitude of consumerism enters the church, we're headed for trouble. We all have our preferences and style choices about how church ought to be. And if we doubt that, ask any worship leader. We like the volume just right, the songs that are our favourites. Sing them just twice over, not 10 times, please. We want the leader or vicar, pastor, to choose our chosen translation of the Bible, if you please. Some of us prefer pews, move them at your peril, while others opt for chairs. Even though the song is now more ancient than modern, Frank Sinatra's My Way is still quite a favourite at funerals. We can live and die quite liking the things to be the way we like them. Thank you very much. Surely, the cursed COVID plague of 5 years ago accentuated our sense of individualism and consumerism. It was really wonderful back then to see churches large and small adapt, offering online services of varying quality. My personal favourite is the one of the lone vicar who set himself alight while pontificating next to a candle. Helpfully, no humans or cassocks were harmed in that production. But since then, some of us feel that we no longer need to experience that Sunday morning sense of pre-church tension, gathering the family, calming conflict over cornflakes, finding a parking space when we arrive, dodging that usher who's blessed with halitosis. Courtesy of Google, we can jump on and offline as we like. Don't like that hymn? Simple. Fast forward. Is the sermon somewhat snore-inducing? That's all right. Log off. Watch when you want, what you want, in the comfort of your Winnie the Pooh pyjamas. COVID may have been tamed, but virulent consumerism may well linger. So, now that we can gather again, let's do so as congregants and family, not picky customers who demand that things are always done to our liking. When it comes to church, there really should be only one king. Meanwhile, back at that American diner, our previously ebullient server was looking distraught. When he brought the food, we discovered that he'd mistakenly ordered my scrambled eggs as fried, sunny side up. We did our best to comfort him, but in that temple of having it my way, I thought he was going to cry. How do we look at church? As congregants or consumers? It was a provocative statement. When broadcaster and journalist Janet Street Porter made a poignant observation about the society we're becoming and suggested that we have a tendency to use technology like a rabble of loud bullies. Writing in The Independent, she lamented that if Jesus had been tortured and crucified today, photos would be online within seconds, along with jokes and so-called funny videos. Social media enables us to fight social injustice and shine a light on acts of terror, but it can also turn us into yobs, people who rarely think of the consequences before pressing the send button. Her comment came after she'd crossed verbal swords on the BBC's topical programme Question Time. Ms. Street Porter quickly came under smartphone fire, receiving a volley of hundreds of abusive texts, insulting her looks, tagging her as stupid, and suggesting that she deserved to die from cancer. She went on to ask a pertinent question, which surely demands our attention. Modern technology has turned us into a shouty society, she remarked. Are we losing our ability to politely disagree? The evidence is in. She's right, with 1 in 3 teachers saying that they've been bruised by text and internet bullying from students and parents. We're in danger of becoming a culture where the person who yells poisonous vitriol the loudest wins. But when dialogue is replaced by diatribe, we all lose. Truth is not discovered when opponents just parry with sound bites. We need to journey in rugged but respectful debate if we're to arrive at helpful conclusions. So what's all of this got to do with the way that we view and approach church life? Well, this virus of word pummeling is not just infecting our wider culture, but can be contaminating in the church too. Those of us who profess to follow Jesus need to get our own houses in order. During election times, there are always the Christians who trade rude, derisory comments on Facebook, perhaps thinking that we can suspend our commitment to measured speech and kindness when the conversation comes around to politics. During election times, some Christian leaders post statements that are loaded with generalities and simplistic solutions, implying that anyone who doesn't share their political viewpoint are idiotic, selfish, fascist, communist, or simply just out of step with God. Obviously, some political policies don't reflect what God wants, but kingdom justice doesn't come when there's just more heat than light. When we arrogantly insist that we have carte blanche divine endorsement for our perspective, our views, rather than robustly arguing our case, we take the easy way out and just duck behind God, or so we think. A few days after a recent election, the then Archbishop of Canterbury gave a speech that included the sad admission that some of the worst hate mail he received came from Christians. He said, "The reality is that we do not, as faith groups in our society, always exhibit the secure tolerance to each other that enables us to speak powerfully of secure tolerance to the world around us. Christians are as bad as anyone at this. In fact, if I dare to be competitive, I think we can be worse." End of sad quote. The phenomena of ranting believers is not new in America, where I live much of the time. Politicians on Capitol Hill have long remarked that evangelical Christians are among the rudest of their constituents, using capital letters and exclamation marks without restraint and threatening the fires of hell if their political representative doesn't vote as they demand. Genuine passion can have an unfortunate side effect. We shout. But concerns expressed at high volume or with a harsh tone don't only wound those on the receiving end, but they lose their credibility. It's difficult for a politician to believe that constituents are authentically loving and caring if they act like blustering bigots, hollering insults. And we don't have to become vitriolic internet trolls to become verbal bullies. Again, it can happen within the church. Those of us who are church leaders can adopt a troll-like posture when we demonize someone in the congregation because they just happen to bother us with a few awkward questions. When we tag the questioner as difficult, it's not long before they graduate to being divisive. And although we don't actually get around to burning the person that we consider to be something of a witch, we certainly shred their reputations with a few words of pious dismissal. Regrettably, in my life as a leader, I've done this, and I confess it's cowardly behavior. As we think about the way that we view church, as we discuss rather than engage in diatribe and denouncing each other because we have conflicting opinions, I really hope that we can offer that model of listening, care, kindness. We've been thinking tonight about how we view church. Does church provide us with a context to serve each other, our community, our world, or do we view it as a place where we can be served? Traveling is rather stressful these days. I mean, if you're flying, you're required to actually go to an airport. And while these places are smattered with gleaming duty-free shops with luxury goods targeted at people who really don't need the discount, the fact is this: airports are places that people actually don't really want to be in unless they are excited 10-year-olds. They're only there because they want to be somewhere else. Airports are emotional black holes crammed with people who are waiting and bored, late and panicked, or waiting on standby to catch another flight because they've missed theirs, which means they're bored and panicked. And then there's the nightmare that is baggage reclaim. Traveling with a large group recently, Kay and I got through to the baggage carousel first and decided it would be helpful to the rest of our gaggle of travelers, there were actually 45 of us, if we hauled all their bags off of the conveyor belt. This would make things easier. It was then that a case of mistaken identity happened. A little English lady, not a part of our group, approached me demanding that I remove her bags from the belt and load her trolley with them. I immediately wanted to tell her that I was not, in fact, an airport employee, but I decided it would be churlish. What was so wrong about being helpful towards this somewhat fragile-looking lady with her bag? So what if she thought that I was a porter? But it was then that my resolve to serve was tested. Apparently, I didn't load her bag onto the trolley in the manner in which it should be loaded, and she told me so. No, not like that. Put it flat. Put it flat. She tut-tutted and huffed at me, didn't say thank you, and didn't seem appreciative in the slightest. It's been said that the only way to find out if we're truly servant-like is to see how we react when people treat us like servants. Up and down the UK, people today have turned up at churches and they've done what they do every weekend. They put the kettle on, they handed out the hymn books, they washed up the teacups, they shook hands with visitors. The vast majority are unpaid and many of them are unsung. Perhaps you're one of them, and a lack of appreciation and gratitude has left you feeling somewhat used. If you find yourself among their ranks, then please accept this, the tiniest expression of thanks that is unworthy of your sacrifice. Thank you. Keep up the good work. And congratulations on being qualified for the description that Jesus celebrated. Servant. The way we view church, it should be a place that allows us to serve. It should be where we can disagree agreeably. It shouldn't be a place where we expect all of our preferences to be honoured. Have a great week. Lucas on Life.